Greetings and welcome to our Story Circle, a Tales of Earth production brought to you by the Fantacorp. Your story today is the beginning of Quirkus Tale, as written by R.J. Borton. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the story, as told by R.J. Borton.
Quirkus Tale. Many years ago, high above the ground, hidden within the interwoven boughs of many mighty oaks, the two elven finalists were down to their last target. Both in their early teens, for elves, and the closest of friends almost since birth, they were each totally focused on winning this most prestigious archery tournament. They were bound to use only true skill and no magic. Master Quirkus and the Lady Illumia were tied for first place. All other competitors had been eliminated far back in the competition. They each had one arrow left to send toward the far distant swinging target. Illumia ready to fire first. The crowd hushed. This shot could clinch the tournament and Quirkus' first loss ever. Raising her hand, she tested the air for movement. She studied the target motion. She focused so intensely that the entire world around her vanished from her perception. Her world was only her and her target. Nothing else existed. Drawing the arrow back, she held but for a second, then released it. It sped true, and the crowd cheered wildly. She had scored a dead center bullseye, a perfect shot. Quirkus immediately congratulated and tenderly hugged his best friend and competitor. She secretly whispered in his ear, "Remember our wager, if I win, or should I say, when I win, that majestic bow, the one he was now using, is mine." He smiled and kissed her on the cheek, whispering in her ear, "When I win, you are my date to the Starlight Yule celebration." Stepping into position, Quirkus readied his final arrow. The gathered elves again became deathly silent. Quirkus, turning towards the large assembly of spectators, bowed to them, then smiled at Illumia, seductively winking his eye. Illumia faintly smiled back, then held her breath. Quirkus appeared to be totally relaxed when, in truth, he was as tightly focused as Illumia had been. He breathed one long, deep breath, drew back the bowstring, and immediately fired. The crowd was silent for one shocked moment, and then they roared. He split her arrow. His arrow struck hers exactly in the center and split it into two parts, both falling away from the target. Only his arrow remained. Illumia threw her hands into the air and laughed hysterically. She then hugged Quirkus and gave him a real kiss, fully on the lips in front of everyone, including their parents. Such was their friendly competitiveness. In running and climbing, she nearly always won. In species magic and woodworking, she almost always won. In archery, Quirkus always won against her and all others. During the Yule celebration, under the bright wintry stars, surrounded by hundreds of glowing illume rods which added to the light of the moon, Quirkus took both of her hands in his and said to her, "Illumia, you are the sun in my day and the stars in my night. You are the only love of my life. Will you honor me by accepting my pledge of lifelong love and fidelity?" "Quirkus, you are my most trusted friend and companion," she responded. Then she paused for a moment and looked at him. "You have always stood beside me in times of stress." Then she hesitated again and smiled at him. Quirkus was trembling. Would she say no? "You are the love of my life. You, and only you, fill my heart with joy." Then she paused a third, longer time, and savored watching the mighty Quirkus squirm. "Of course I accept, silly man. Why did you wait so long?" Their kiss following her acceptance of his pledge nearly caused the moon to blush. Over the next few years, Quirkus and Illumia lovingly shared their lives, their bodies, and all of their being. They were an example and model for true elven love. Quercus was on a hunting trip with many of the bowmen and women. Illumia was helping shape and guide the growth of a young oak tree into becoming a part of their enchanted home when disaster struck. A massive party of strange, simian-like creatures swarmed into, over, and through the mighty oaks of their enchanted homeland. The elves fought bravely. Many of the creatures died from arrow, sword, and dagger, but there were far too many for the peaceful elves. Their homeland was overrun, and all within, mostly the elderly women and children, were mercilessly slaughtered. The elves in the hunting party felt their deaths and instantly rushed to their aid, but they were too late. They found only death and destruction. Their families and friends were all slaughtered. Even their pet birds and squirrels were torn into pieces. Many animals and elves were partially eaten. Quercus wailed, "No!" and fondly hugged his dear, dead Illumia. He held her and cried for many hours. Working through their unimaginable sorrow and deep pain at their loss, the surviving elves examined several of the strange dead creatures. They were grotesque. They had long, strong arms and legs like a great ape, with the jaws and teeth of a black wolf. Their eyes were large and nearly black. They had been armed with clubs and crude axes and were obviously tree climbers. They were covered in filth and insects, and their smell was sickening. The elves, lacking any other words to describe them, called them Uggs. Quercus' intense grief turned to rage, and finally into an icy cold resolve. "They will see justice for this, and I will be her instrument," he swore. He and two carefully selected companions, after assuring that the dead would receive a proper burial, swore an oath to secure justice for the fallen and left in pursuit of the Uggs. Each elf carried a full quiver of black feathered arrows with deadly poison tips. It had been many years since an elf of their homeland had carried the Black Death arrows. Silently running through their very well-known forest, they quickly caught up with the slower-moving Uggs. One by one, silently, seemingly from out of nowhere, they systematically brought down the foul creatures. At first, the Uggs devoured their slain companions, but quickly learned that the poison was just as effective when ingested. When there were but two remaining, the three elves used strong, light nets to capture them. With ropes around their necks and poisoned arrows constantly aimed at them, these two vicious and violent Uggs were forced to lead the elves to the cave where they had come from. The subterranean path led deeply down to a large cavern filled with cages and recently used instruments of both physical and magical manipulation. Nothing else was alive within the cavern. There were many signs of grotesque torture and execution-style killing. Several female Uggs and young were found dead within their cages. A few elven bodies were also found and appeared to have been used to enrage and feed the Uggs, most likely providing a scent for those that attacked the elven homeland. Within the cavern, the remaining Uggs made their final attempt to escape by attacking their elf guards, and quickly died in that attempt. Quercus and his companions realized that the number of cages far exceeded the number of Uggs that they had encountered. There were at least 100 more unaccounted for. Who had created these gross, violent abominations? Why? The elves returned to their homeland and rejoined their remaining kinsmen. Together, they disassembled the remaining dwellings and removed all trace of their ever having lived there. Many bid their farewells and left to seek kinsmen in other elven communities, and to warn them of the existence and threat of the Uggs. Quercus took 7 of the remaining fighters and formed a hunting party dedicated to seeking out and eliminating the remaining Uggs. This party grew as other elven communities encountered the Uggs, and soon Quercus was captain of a sizable company of elven sword and bow men and women. When you are traveling at night through a mighty forest, listening to the peaceful sounds of nature, remember, your peace and safety was won and is constantly preserved by Quercus and his dedicated soldiers. Quercus and his party, after setting several of their unique oak snares and traps all around the town, entered Murrin Beach about the same time as Tamazian and... But that is another tale for another day.
The preceding story is a work of fiction. All names, characters, species, classes, places, things, and incidents are either the products of the author's imagination or used fictitiously. Any resemblances to fictitious or actual persons living or dead, and events or locales, real or imaginary, are entirely coincidental. This copyrighted story is the privately owned intellectual property of Tales of Aerith Publications and the Fantacorp of Bensalem, Pennsylvania, and not in or to be released to the public domain. All rights are reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or in part in any form. No permission is granted to tell, retell, print, copy, reproduce, or distribute this story for profit by any means for any reason without the prior written consent of the Fantacorp. Please visit our website, www.venturesofaerith.com, for more information.